Welcome to Non-Fungible Rebels, a podcast where creators, tech, internet culture, crypto, and marketing meet each other. It's me, Annie Alexander, and in each episode, me and the Rebels will have a real unscripted talk, share genuine opinions, and show raw emotions. Should we start? Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Non-Fungible Rebels. It's me, Annie Alexander, and today I'm talking to Vesa. Vesa is a pioneer in the digital art and NFT art. He's been around since a very long time, and I remember we had a podcast interview probably about 3 years ago when we did speak about NFT art back in the days when it wasn't really such a hot topic. It was just starting. People were just trying to figure out what it actually was. I was very happy to be able to talk to you back then because back then you were one of the very few people who actually seemed to have figured it out and imagined really well in depth what it was all about. So welcome back. I'm really happy that we're catching up and doing this again, Vesa.
Well, same, Annie. It was so much fun to have the conversation and our offline conversations as well before, and kind of synergistic ideas of what this space, I suppose you never should say should be about, because it is what it is about and people find their own utility and their own way. But there are certain sort of ideas and directions which keep resonating with a certain few of us, and we tend to remain friends for a long time discussing these things, because it's some of these, maybe that's one part of the thing. We're now at the end of another bear market. This is now the third one for me. There are those who come into this space when the hype is on, and then they disappear once the lights are not on for a while. And then there's the other ones who sort of came in here not just because of the hype and the lights being on, but we keep building also when the green exits the market for a while. So this is one guidepost of how we also find in our circles who those are who we trust and who we want to build with, you know. But regardless, very happy to be with you again. It's evening time. It's been a very long day here in Helsinki, where I'm at the moment after 3 years of being in Dubai. And excited to have the conversation, but apologies for half drowsiness, because it's been quite the grind today putting our projects together. So.
No, of course, it's good. And I think you mentioned something that is very important, like, you know, we've been in touch during these 3 years. And I think that happens usually when people don't really unite around a token or a price per se, right? Because as you said, like, you know, we have bull and bear cycles. And if what unites us during the bull cycle are the things that disappear when the bear comes, obviously, kind of, you know, people just lose touch because they lose that common interest of theirs that they are about, right? Mm-hmm. And in our case, you know, the conversations we had and the topics we covered were not really around the money aspect of it, and we're not really around kind of, you know, the things that were so attractive during the bull market. So I think that was one of the reasons that we kept in touch, and we had like similar visions and values about the space in general. So I think that's very important. And those who come and go, it's more kind of, you know, jumping on opportunity and leaving it and jumping on something else once it disappears, right? So yeah.
Which, you know, if that's what you're about and you build where the energy is at, I'm not necessarily knocking that that's the wrong thing to do. It's just I've also stayed in this space despite some of its fallings and things that I don't like about this space, also because there's nowhere else for a digital artist like myself who is doing this innovation stuff to actually go. So I wasn't super happy with how the first run of NFTs went and the PFPs and the kind of money grabs and all the shadow games. But the technology is why, fundamentally, as well as the resources, is why I joined this whole space and kind of saw where the future is going and the actual utility of the technology of how we're going to need it for our now ever-evolving digital culture that is increasingly nomadic and increasingly global, the utility has gone nowhere. The same vision from day one that I understood of why this is important is there, and the fluctuations are the fluctuations. But there, yeah, there really isn't anywhere else to go if you do what I do. So then, to a certain degree, then my back is up against the wall to always defend it and fight for it to be something that we can keep believing in.
Yeah, what I found from my personal experience is that, you know, you do so much more, and you're kind of, you know, fighting so much harder when your back is against the wall, right? Because there is absolutely no option for failure. You just can't afford that. And that, you know, the only way is to fight back and to win. So yeah, I totally get where you're coming from. And I remember our conversations back then, like almost 3 years ago, when we were talking, when the whole thing was just starting, right? Like, you know, when digital artists actually found a place where digital art was considered like real art, because before, like, there was this division and it was always kind of, you know, not really appreciated so much before.
It's still very much there. If you go to the fine art realm, and the kind of how it's perceived, and sometimes for good measure, and sometimes because people just don't understand the space, there's still a hell of a lot of confusion. This is very, very early days for digital art in terms of the ownership of digital art and its digital rights altogether for the world. We're very early days. I mean, there's now people who are professionals who will say something like the genre of NFT art, and there really isn't any such thing. It's like an NFT is a glorified receipt, and that's what an NFT really kind of points to. And there's all the other genres of art that exist there out into the world are very much present in one way or another in NFT art, whether it's going from someone who's doing a traditional oil painting and then taking digitizing that and having it as an NFT, or someone who's utilizing all the different kinds of mediums and tools and ideas that you could possibly throw together and then minting that as NFT art. So it still keeps being very confusing to people what even the very core and the essence of this whole thing is. And that's, you know, one sign as into that we're very early.
Yeah, I know, like, many people kind of, you know, confuse the fact and think that they are actually buying the image or the music or whatever is kind of, you know, behind the token, which is not the case. And I remember, like, in the very beginning, back in those days when I was exploring the space and trying to understand, like, what the NFT art in you know, represented, it was very, you know, I had this... when I realized that the NFT itself is just the token pointing to the art, to me, it was like a big revelation. I was like, oh my God, like, you know, this completely different thing. And then, you know, but that's when I started defining it for myself, just to trying to understand, okay, you know, if I have to explain NFTs to real people, like, you know, normies, what do I say? What is it from the art perspective, right? From the artist perspective. And to me, at the end of the day, it ended up becoming like a tokenized emotions and experiences. Because I think, like, you know, what is important is what's behind it. What is it pointing to? That's where the magic is happening, right? That is where you get that emotional impact from. Not the token, not the smart contract, not the code, but what it actually represents at the end of the day behind it. So, and that, as you said, like, you know, can be of any genre. It can be anything. Like, you know, it can be any type of art from its vertical perspective, and then it can be any style of that vertical, like any style of music, any style of painting, any style of sculpture. So but unpacking that, I guess it takes time to unpack and understand that. On the other hand,
I wish it was only about trying to understand the message of it, and if it was a direct line from, okay, I don't get this at all, to, oh, okay, that's what it is, that would be pretty simple. But because there's so much money to be made in the first rush of things for confusing people about what it is, then that becomes the complication, because there's so many other agendas apart from actually just helping people understand as to what it is, as to why it takes so much time.
Yeah, and because I think the coverage, the media coverage of that space was about how much money, right? Like the headlines were mostly about like 69 million people, I don't know how many million tweets it was sold by so many millions, et cetera, et cetera. Always the focus was about the money and kind of, you know, a very impressive big numbers thrown here and there by the media without really actually talking about what it is, right? Which kind of led to attracting people who cared about that way more, who cared about money more than about art somehow. So I feel like, you know, we ended up with disguised art, so to speak, when we had all these 10K PFP collections, which were kind of, you know, claiming that they were art as well, which to some degree, maybe it was right. But I felt really bad when artists with their, you know, with their creations were actually comparing their art to the PFP art. And to me, those were like two completely different things, right? You know, the NFT artist community versus the PFP communities of the collections. To me, it felt two completely different things in terms of vibe, in terms of purpose, in terms of kind of, you know, desires and emotions and experiences. So I don't know. Did you feel like those were two completely different things? Or art is art and it's kind of, you know...
No, definitely not in that camp. There are totally and completely different things. How would I say that there was so much going on? I mean, in the first run of NFTs, you had COVID. And even just in the crypto space, because I'm pretty much a veteran and going to all of these conferences around the world, the culture of crypto before and after COVID was completely different. You had this kind of like ethos of what the whole space was about. And of course, you had greed and the Lambo boys and all that kind of stuff ever since the beginning. But even those guys usually understood what the core of the technology was and why it was made to begin with and what problems it solved and all of those kinds of things. And after COVID, all of a sudden, you realize that it's very different. You didn't have that culture to begin with. So crypto altogether changed. And if you look at what happened in between is like how many family companies and mom and pop shops and everyone's life was put into turmoil because of all these COVID restrictions and everything. And people had to find new ways of making money online. And then you had all of these impressive numbers that were being thrown about. And I wouldn't blame it all on media either, because it just seems to be the same case even in the legacy art world, so to speak. Is that, you know, whenever something has sold in Sotheby's for a large amount of money, that's when you're clapping. I think there was this brilliant meme, or wasn't even a, might have been a Banksy thing, that, you know, when the painting is rolled in, no one is clapping. But when the hammer comes down, then you're clapping for the money that was being paid for that painting. And it's not necessarily the media's fault. It's just how people function. And the issue is a little bit deeper than that we might even kind of contemplate, because if you look at something like Renaissance Italy or whatever, art belonged to everyone from the peasant to the king, and it was a part of the kind of constitution of the whole of the country and its way of life. Everyone understood the language of art and they spoke it. And now the way that our universities, even for the upper class or the upper middle class who've gone to art schools and learned humanities and whatever, they've learned it in a very picnic style of not necessarily knowing the great masters or not knowing the lineage and how to get to the point of where you not understand what you have in front of you when you have a painting. And pop culture, movies came and they started really changing how important paintings were, because all of a sudden the attention was on movies or what you could do with that. And art hasn't really been able to compete in a great way with that for a long time. But now, actually, with digital ownership rights and the metaverse and AI and NFT sort of tokenized art, you get to start making these holistic experiences that actually now start to compete with movies and TV, and it, not only in the way that it's entertaining or it gives you something, some enlightenment for your soul, it starts to be a financial decision to build cultures and communities around those expressions, and therefore they become all of a sudden interesting, not only from the point of view of leisure or kind of showing your social status flexing, they start to become a way of life. And that's kind of an interesting phase of where we are with art with that. And done right, which is something that I've been painstakingly building for the last 15 years and now really ready for this next coming bull run, these are the things, because people sometimes mistake me for being a little bit of, he's a little bit of down on this or criticizing NFTs or criticizing this and that. I criticize it because I love it so much that I want to see it done right, because when it's done right, it enriches us all on such a multitude of levels.
Yeah.
And I usually talk about the dark side of things, because through that, you get to understand how to do it right and why doing it right is so important and those kinds of things. So I never kind of leave you just hanging with this doomsday kind of scenarios. It's more like, yeah, this is kind of fucking bullshit about this right now, but if we do it like this, then everyone's going to be happy.
Yeah.
Well, not everyone, but you know, most
yeah people. I think it's very important to criticize and voice sort of, you know, concerns in this space. And I think it's always had a backlash because we had all that, this whole kind of, you know, Wagme mentality, and anyone who was saying something wrong about the space were kind of, you know, fudding the space in general and scaring people off and all that stuff. So there
are, and where are those where are those Wagmes now?
Shitposting on Twitter, I guess. I don't know.
No, it's just, well, they haven't been posting Wagme lately.
No, they don't post Wagme anymore, but they just try to monetize their Twitter accounts, I guess. I don't know. But the thing is, I do believe, and I'm with you there, that, you know, when there are things that need to be fixed or need to be improved, they need to be voiced out. Because if no one talks about it, then, you know, how else are we going to pay attention to that and to try to figure out how to make it better, right? And there are tons of things in this space that, that you know, need improvement and needs our attention and need people to actually kind of, you know, tackle it and try to make it better. So I totally agree. I know about the backlash. I know when people kind of objectively look into things and voice out concerns, they are not always heard because they immediately get that kind of, you know, a group of people claiming that you're the negative person, you're kind of all that stuff, which I completely don't agree with.
I don't remember who's saying it was, but it was something along the lines of, it's very difficult to get someone to understand something when their financial incentive is that way around, that it's not of their benefit to understand it, you know. So that was lot of what was going on in the first run of things.
That is so true. And which is why many people were attracted to PFPs, and the liquidity was mostly there versus art and, you know, and one-on-one pieces and art collections, because there people would see the potential of making more money faster. And it kind of, to me, it felt like people were treating them like altcoins with pictures, because that's what they became eventually. The non-fungible kind of, you know, the non-fungible element was dropped, and it was just a more fun way to do DeFi and to do kind of, you know, shitcoin posting, because they had pictures next to them, right? So it was more fun. But the overall sentiment, the behavior, the way they were looking at that stuff was very similar to DeFi guys. It was kind of a complete dungeon behavior and trading. So no one really cared if that monkey was good looking or kind of, you know, artsy or whatever. Like, you know, it could have been just a poo emoji with different kind of generative traits.
And they were.
And, you know, it was everything. We saw everything back then, the pickles and everything else. It's just, you know, it was as stupid as it could get, because it didn't matter, right? It was kind of, you know, it didn't really matter. And I think many artists in the space got impacted by that. Many people lost motivation, seeing how much time, effort, blood, sweat, and tears they were putting into their art, and then kind of, you know, looking around and seeing these PFPs kind of, you know, raising millions. And then when the bear market came, unfortunately, many had to go back to their jobs and even kind of, you know, completely leave the space. But several stayed. So, I mean, I don't know, like, what kept them motivated? What kept them going? Because probably you were more connected to those artists at that point, you know, when things started kind of becoming colder and the bear actually came in full force. There were people who kept creating every single day. So what kept them moving? Because I know it's very hard.
I think altogether, artists are one of the most easiest class of people to exploit, because we don't really do what we do primarily because we want to make money. It's not even necessarily in the top three or five of the priorities of why we do this. It's just that's us a little bit more hardened and seasoned foxes who've been around for a long time. We kind of understand how the game is played, or otherwise you're not going to be an artist for very long, in order to kind of keep the ship at sea. And again, now, I mean, I've been a professional creative my whole life. I had some jobs like working at a liquor store and some ornament store when I was very young. But then after that, I went to film school and I started a production company, and I worked through that as a freelancer and whatever. So whether I was working in music or film, or then in contemporary art 15 years ago, I've had to find ways to survive. And there have been years where it has been more difficult than I ever could have imagined it being. And some very dark days are behind that. If someone would have let me know in advance how hard it was going to be at some point, I'm not sure if I would have gone into that storm. But luckily we were able to, even with my wife, to kind of manage through the hardest of those days. And you just become smart about it. And one way, which might sound a little bit cold now, is that you realize along the way that it's an absolute luxury if you get someone to care about what it is that you're doing. No one owes you shit. No one cares about your art for the most of your career. If you do manage to get into that bracket where you've done some amazing things and your art is of fantastic quality, that might only get you as far as someone wants you to auction something for their charity for free. That's how crazy this business is. And you must not let it make you bitter, and it must not let you kind of kill the enthusiasm. But there have been, like, during the last 3 years, now I'm in a creative period again because I'm back in Helsinki and I'm working on this couple of other things whilst we're putting this company together and all this kind of stuff. But I'm very happy because now I've spent about, I'd say, 20% of my time doing the art, whereas most of the last 2 years I've been mostly a manager and a kind of chief operating officer of my own project as an artist. So I really haven't done that much art during the last 2 years. And now this last half a year has been amazing because I've really gotten to paint and gotten to shoot with these models and really become creative. So I'm much, much happier this way. But it's just necessary. I'm doing something that is cutting edge. It's not something that people easily understand, neither from the NFT side nor from the legacy art side, but I have a lot of allies in both. But most importantly, I now have a team around me of Web3 experts and AI experts and those people who I've passionately and longstandingly been building with to have this network around me, that now we're really ready to go for the next one. And I've learned how to delegate. I've learned how to make it worthwhile for those other people, because many artists also they think that, you know, because it's hard, that everyone's just going to come around you and help you do things. That's not how it works. you're going to have to offer incentives to those who are around you in order for them to care, because they have their own things and their own lives and their own passions and whatever that they could be pursuing. Yeah. So, you know, those you can't afford to be too narcissistic or just sort of revel in your own navel, as they say. And that would be the way in how you survive, and you actually get to be an artist as an adult.
Yeah. No, I totally get you. Like, you know, the journey of being an artist, especially full-time artist, where actually kind of, you know, paying the bills depends on it. It's very tough, because even if you're not doing that operational stuff, even if you're just creating, just promoting and selling it, it takes a lot of time and effort and mindset shift, because most of us kind of hate self-promotion. Most of us, it's very, but it doesn't come to us naturally, right? Kind of, you know, to talk, like, I don't know, to shield ourselves, so to speak. So I totally get that. And you mentioned that, you know, you've been working on a new thing that is cutting edge. And, you know, I took a sneak peek at your, at that collection that's coming. It's called Senses. And I was just looking at it, and it said that basically it's a result of a 15-year process, which is like a lot of time. So so tell us a little bit about it, like what it is, why did it take so long, what should we expect from it, like what are you doing at the moment, that creative period, what does it entail?
Well, thanks for asking. It's something that I'm deeply passionate about. If I may, I'll rewind just a little bit before I start answering those, because that would make more sense after I say this, which is that...
Yeah, give any context that makes sense. Sure.
Because we're forming a company called Vesa Digital, which is now a strong core team. And it actually revolves around, because I have about 500 high-resolution digital artworks that have been made over the last 15 years. And there's huge, huge amounts of work that I've done both in body painting and photography and painting and photographing those paintings and nature photography and all these kinds of things. And that's how I really started putting art together 15 years ago. And we, through the technology of NFTs, we realized how to incrementally sell the IP of those artworks in such a way that we can form a company around it, both making new and exciting things in the physical realm from art cars and villas and jets and all that kind of stuff, as well as utilizing the different partnerships that we have with different metaverse companies to scale the digital services that we have. So that's the embedded sort of superstructure onto which this Senses series is also a part of. But that's been the thing, because I'm still terrified of things like there's different things that tend to always become the icky thing that you have to do. And right now, it's me utilizing the paid version of ChatGPT to kind of put the business plan together and the finances and paying the salaries and how much we need for marketing and all those kinds of things. And luckily, I do have people that will help me with that as well. But now that's the hard thing that I have to do and try to figure out, because that's probably the most uncomfortable for me, is like Excel sheets. Wow. You know, so, but to counter that, essentially the Senses series got its start that when I jumped from a filmmaker to a contemporary artist, I essentially got this idea that what if I started body painting on people and they would offer the correct proportion of the body? I could light, I could photograph, I could play with paint and photograph the paintings and put it together with Photoshop. And if that would be something new and exciting. And 15 years ago, when I saw the first artwork in front of me, I just realized that this is something that no one else in the world is doing and packaging it together in the way that I was, because there were these sort of psychological processes that we were going through with these models in order to either let go of something that was no longer functioning for your life, something you might have been afraid of, and then kind of confronting that, or then going towards a dream and kind of manifesting that into an artwork, not only about their personal story, but also how I reflected to that story and how the grand story of humanity, let's say, the Shakespearean play was to come to as a part of it. And 2 years ago, we were with my wife at the countryside, and I should have been resting. My immune system was having large problems, and it was something that I really shouldn't have been doing, but I'm very bad at resting. So I did have my computer there, and I just started looking at some of my old materials from these body painting sessions, if I could maybe make an artwork or something. And then I just realized that I had shot a bunch of nudes, usually at the start of many of these body painting sessions, just to test the lights or, you know, kind of check the room temperature a little bit and whatever. And I saw some of those photographs and I thought, these are actually really, really beautiful. And what if I was to make something to mix these nudes with that paint? Would that be a new flavor of how to put some artworks together and celebrate the senses of just kind of figuring out what these stories would be after years and years of not even probably seeing most of these people? And then I put the first series together. We ended up selling them through crypto.com and dropping some of them one of ones. And they started doing okay. It was still the bear market, the height of the bear market when we did the crypto.com drop. But it was still okay, you know. But I ran out of material immediately. And I've been living in Dubai the last 2 years. I wouldn't do this kind of thing over there just out of respect for their culture or, this kind of thing. But now that we've been back in Helsinki, then I just started shooting some DMs on Instagram to some potential models and different interesting people if they would be up for modeling for in front of a 45-year-old like a random dude who's DMing me them on the internet. But lo and behold, because people did see that I do this a little bit differently than most people, that they gave me their trust and they came to share their stories and started shooting the models one by one. Some of them were agency models, some of them maybe more on the amateur side or actors or circus artists, all different kinds of stories. And they told me very deep and personal ideas of what they were about and what was holding them back and whatever. And for example, this one beautiful thing, and this is something that you might not know, and my apologies if this is a little bit of a heavy subject, but it relates to this artwork, is that we lost our son in childbirth 2.5 years ago when that was upon us, and it was a massive hit to me and my wife, of course. And now all of a sudden I was shooting one of these census sessions with a lady called Vera here. And I asked her, so do you have a dream of some sort or something that you'd like to go towards? And she just said, I'm now nearly 28 years old and I would love to ride a motorcycle. And I'm actually at this point in my life where, my parents were very restrictive. She's from middle of Finland. And I wasn't allowed to ride any motorcycles. I wasn't even allowed to hop on to co-ride on a Vespa when I was a kid. And it's something that was very annoying to me. And right now I've decided that I'm going to go and drive a motorcycle cart for myself. So essentially I just built this make-believe motorcycle in the studio with a wind machine with a couple of chairs and whatever. I started playing motorcycle sounds and whatever in the studio, recording it with stills as well as video. And it ended up being this sort of Kill Bill-esque scene that I thought, okay, I'm going to paint something yellow and cool that's going to live on her skin. And then we're going to make an AI motorcycle that she's going to ride. And it's going to be, the soundtrack is going to be amazing on it and whatever. And then I was like, okay, that's already really pretty cool. And then at the end of the session, because usually they take about 5 or 6 hours or something like that, we ended up just discussing, and I told her that this story that, you know, by the way, this is something that happened with me and my wife. And it's, and she said that, oh, by the way, the reason why my parents were so restrictive was that my big sister was born before me, and she was born with only a half a heart, and she died just a couple of days after of being born. So this is why her parents were so overprotective of her, is that because they were afraid that something like that would happen to her. And that became a full cycle, of course, as a story for me to be now wiser than when, if we are going to be blessed with a child, that we would know that that's not also the great good way to kind of export your fears onto your children. And then it gave me the vision that there should be a full pumping heart behind her as she's driving this sort of motorcycle in this artistic expression of what she's doing, in order to know that she has a full heart and she shouldn't live with a half of one just because of all of these tragedies have happened. And it, of course, I need to overcome my own, fears and ideas of something. So we kind of mutually serve each other in these stories as we learn from one another. And even just from the raw material of when I'm looking at what we've just accomplished here is something that I've never seen existing anywhere at all. And there really isn't any other place where you could showcase and sell this and make a project like these out of all of these stories that makes sense if it's not in the NFT world. And you can make it in so many different kinds of forms. And I'll tell you another one as well, which is fascinating. And her artist name is Little Kuneli. And she's this alternative model, also from more up north in Finland. And essentially, there's parts of her story that I'm not allowed to tell because it's too sensitive. But essentially, her modeling works were very kind of dark. It's something like you'd see Marilyn Manson-esque or this kind of thing, you know. I'm old school. I don't know who that kind of is right now in the music world doing something similar, but quite sort of dark and satanic and this kind of thing. And when we got to know each other, she comes to the studio, she starts sharing a little bit that she's maybe a little bit on the spectrum and was bullied very badly in school and kind of exercised out of the social groups and this kind of thing and ended up being raped 3 times and all of this brutal fucking shit. And I can't go into all of it in detail. Then and she's very bubbly and prickly and sort of nice person and needed attention, of course, because there's so much damage that is going on over there. And during this 5 or 6 hours, we were just hanging out where I'm letting her know that it's cool to just be. There's no need to pose or utilize sexiness or sadness or whatever. It's just that it's okay to kind of be in your body and be fully there present. And little by little, she had the courage to do so, which was beautiful. But then at some point, she just said that, you know, this thing that she has on the inside of her out of all of these experiences is almost like a black spider that's inside of her somehow. So it's like I started playing this ayahuasca music. I don't know if you know about these sort of psychedelic things that you do in the jungle. You drink this potion and go on these journeys or whatever. So we almost did it like that. There was this ayahuasca soundtrack. And we started purging. The idea is that she throws up this spider and kind of gets rid of that whole thing. And she did it. And you could feel it in the room as it was happening that she really was exercising almost like a demon out of herself. And then that ended up being an artwork already now in the stills form that I can send you, which is already on the page. You will see that artwork. And it's kind of it's this sort of water that comes from this very dingy and dark place, almost like Mordor or something from Lord of the Rings. And then this blood is being washed away by that water that is then emerging a few beautiful flowers from the sides on this burnt to crisp sort of land as she's kind of throwing up the spider. So you go, and this is what I mean when I say that, you know, it's not your average nudes going to be shot with your, you know, whatever, just randomly perverted photographer. And those stories are so deeply personal that after each one that I usually spend, like I said, about 5 to 6 hours with these people, they become friends. It's like you've gone to war together. You've done like a deep personal experience and shared many of the battle scars.
It's very personal and intimate, isn't it? It's kind of, you know, sometimes you don't share such experiences with your best friends even. So, you know, I can imagine how bonding that could be because it requires so much trust, so much opening up. And kind of for both of you, it's an experience that you had for the first time in your life. It's unique and it's new and it becomes yours, like, you know, hers and yours kind of, you know, together. It unites you somehow to a certain extent. So I can totally understand that. And it kind of made me, you were telling about this and it kind of made me feel like the whole process of creating that art was, you know, it felt like it was part of the art as well, right? Like, you know, for you as a journey, it was kind of an artistic journey overall of the creation of the thing. But also, it included, and it wasn't just yours, like it felt like a collaboration type of thing, right? Because you had that person with their story and with their kind of, you know, input to it. And when you said that with that digital art, you can't go anywhere else, I get that now because, like, you know, the beauty of this space is that you end up with experimenting and finding new formats, and you know, and me as a consumer of art end up seeing things that I would never see in galleries, that I would never be allowed to be exposed to in other places. And here, because no one is gatekeeping that, like, you know, people can come up with any ideas and implement them and share them with me, right? So I feel like, you know, what you are describing, to me, it feels like a completely unique and new format of art, because it has like a multimedia thing, including the stories, including like the real life stories, but then, you know, the bodies, and then kind of, you know, the art on top of that, and it feels like it's a kind of, you know, a unique way of storytelling. It's not a painting, it's not kind of a nude photography, it's not one of the things, it's all of it, and it all tells a story. So yeah, I have to dig into it much more, because it feels like every piece is kind of, you know, needs more time and attention just to dive into that. That's how it feels like.
I'm so happy you resonate with it. And that's only sort of the art side. We've managed to capture something that we feel is a very unique process that I hope is actually going to spread, because people would remember a little bit more of what art is for, because it's you can't just people say, oh, you can get pretty close when you just click of a button, generate something with AI, but you can't, like, you're skipping a whole thing, which is that this story and this process of how you end up with still a beautiful image is what makes it actually valuable, and what reminds you of why we're human and what art is reflecting back to us is that's, I feel, is the essence of it. But then that's one third is the creative side, and then there's the whole team that we've put together around this whole thing, and the marketing strategies and all and how we're going to actually get it out there. And the third part is that we're starting a whole fund, which is going to be a fund that does many utilities outside of what this art is doing as well, which is going to be tied to this art of significance. So, and then one more, I suppose, fourth thing is that I found this AI expert called Antu, who's helping with a bunch of things. And he took on a part of the creative challenge, which is that I've been thinking about how to do AI art right for a long time now, since about 2018 or so. And essentially what ended up happening is that I wanted the AI to be trained on a lot of my photography, either the body painting or nudes or whatever, and a lot of those paintings that I've done, which is tens of thousands of images. So now we started by giving all of the material that I've shot with these new first 12 models, because I've now shot three more, but it was about 12,000 images that we gave the AI to look at what I'd shot, in terms of the models, and then about 10,000 images of my paintings that it got educated on. And then it started putting together these senses works with my style as generative images. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have two lines for this. We're going to have the very human artisan line, and it's still, because I have to use so much time and effort in order to put these images together, that the AI can't do anything like that yet. So you still realize what it is that sort of drives the human side of it. But also in terms of the images that it's now being generated, they're beautiful artworks also. And we'll find a different medium for it. But the subtext under the AI series is slightly different, because it's one thing that we keep doing with AI, like you saw the Gemini kind of disasters of not being able to generate white people and all whatever.
Yeah.
Garbage. So it's the problem with AI, as we're educating it and towards its potential sentience, is that the problem is not so much what AI would do if you just let it go. It's how we're trying to meddle with it to try and make it sort of warped and twisted to begin with. Mm-hmm. So one naive, perhaps, hope that I have for the AI series of this census side is that the stories that we tell and the way that we're putting it together is that if there is something, some possibility that AI can learn about humanity in this more pure form of storytelling, then, you know, it would reach some conclusions of its own to learn from us in order for us to habit one another, and hopefully it will be eventually something that is sentient on its own, regardless of us. Because I think the problem is a little bit like this. If you're a public speaker, like the both of us are, we start our careers and it's very nerve-wracking and your voice can tremble. There's all kinds of nerves going on and whatever. And that's because your attention is on you, because you think that the audience cares about how your hair is or whatever the stupid nonsense. And then you learn along the way that how it actually goes is that you're not going to be self-conscious when you start feeling like you actually have something to share to people and your focus is on them, of what you can give them. And you realize that, you know, so few people care about anything other than what it is that you can give. And I think AI is a little bit the same. We're far too worried about AI taking over or all of those kinds of things, because we're still looking at our own navel and not its actual birth process of what AI is going to be. And if we just let it be and let it do its thing, it's probably a lot less interested in us than we think that it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense. I think it's been lots of debates and kind of, you know, controversial takes about AI art in general, and is it like quote unquote art at all or isn't it? And, you know, the person who just puts in prompts and ends up with paintings, just like, you know, for example, I can't draw myself, like I don't have that talent, right? But potentially I can prompt it with words and explain what I imagine, and it could do something about it. But then in that case, you know, who's the artist? Is it a collaboration between the two? Is it the AI? Is it me? I don't know. Like there are so many kind of different takes to it. And there are two extremes, right? Like, you know, there are this group of people who completely kind of, you know, devalue AI art, saying that it's not art at all. There are some artists who get influenced because of that and try to hide that they are using AI for their art just for that reason solely. And there are others who are kind of proudly kind of trying to own that vertical, saying, yeah, I am an AI artist for sale, right? Just kind of going all in into that domain. What's your take about that? Obviously, like, you know, you're using that as a tool for your art process. As you already said, but do you even compare the ones that you did just by yourself and the ones that are coming with the help of AI? Is there any comparison, or like, you know, is one more valuable than the other? How do you look at that overall?
Well, I would say that the artisan stuff is more valuable in terms of the artistic substance of it. Now, bizarrely, as we are in the NFT space, the AI works because they will start from a lot cheaper, and people here navigate through community and they navigate through the X's. It might just be that the AI artworks are going to do the X's faster than the artisan lines. This is why we've sort of built both of them. I feel, well, actually, when I told my gallerist that I was going to do an AI line, he was like, be very careful, Vesa, because, you know, there's a lot of collectors who are going to be totally suspicious and they're not going to like it at all that you use any of these tools or whatever. And I just said, listen, it's there's two lines. They're clearly marked. The other one is the artisan line and the other one is the AI side. And the AI tools are now here, and it's the conversation is like this, because I'm sure some people felt like when oil paints became a technology that is cheating, because, you know, you should mix your colors and powders some other way than not just buy them easily and readily available in a tube like that, you know. So, and then, you know, my artistic career really started as Photoshop being a part of the tool, and the snobbery towards Photoshop has been something that, you know, this is not a tool you should be using, then you're no longer fine art or whatever, you know, this kind of thing. So AI is now the same. Me, fundamentally, why you do art to begin with is some sort of, lack of a better word, transcendence. This kind of communicating about what it is that we are as human beings, what is soulful, what is the shared human experience, and reflecting that and helping one another kind of walk towards the light, I suppose. And whatever tool that you're using, if you're actually managing to do it, is what makes you an artist, and a certain kind of noble pursuit of that, I suppose. But then Just some people do art because they want to manipulate the markets with it. Some people do art because they want to just participate in something fun. There's a million agendas going on in art. And in this way, it's impossible to say, you know, what is art, is because it's so many different things to other people. But I suppose I represent a slightly more purist line on that, is that it should be something that nourishes the soul on one level or another, or it's just commerce or social status games or whatever. So
yeah, it's a flex thing, right? It's sometimes, yeah, like some of that is just another status element of, okay, I own this thing, and you may not even look at it at all, but you just have it for different other reasons, but not for feeding yourself. So yeah, that is true.
But the greatest thing is, and this is just to say that this is the point, is you can have it all. You can, with this NFT functionality, you can actually have something that is truly deep and soulful. You can have it built around a community, and you can build it around the money as well. You can have it all as an impactful fist. And I think this is the beautiful thing. And this is what I mean about building it right, and why it has taken 15 years in order to actually achieve this place where I can say we can do the AI side right, we can do the artisan right, we have the teams right, we have everything ready in order for that. If it does whatever, 5x, 10x, 20x, 100x, whatever, we say we actually deserve it because we built it to withstand from the critical side, from the creative side, from the team side, and whatever. So, you know,
yeah, and you didn't rush it, which is, yeah, you didn't rush it. You thought it through, which is like very important, because like many people kind of just rush things through because they are impatient or because of the market conditions, they don't want to miss it out and all that stuff. So I totally get that. For people who are getting into this, or, you know, who have been in the space has changed a lot since that very beginning of 3 years ago when we just spoke. And now there are tons of different, not only tools. I mean, we mentioned AI as a tool that now is kind of, you know, more probably affordable and easy to learn for the masses compared to before. But also different platform, different blockchains, different sort of, you know, the choice is overwhelming. So let's say if someone is preparing a collection, is working on a project, there are so many choices. Like, how does one even sort of, you know, what do we need to look into? How do we even choose? How did you choose where to mint your collection, for example?
Well, we're still deciding on a couple of those. The Origin 30 are on Super Rare. Then we did one drop on crypto.com. We're now definitely looking into the ordinals, or the inscriptions on Bitcoin is pretty much where a lot of the energy and hype is at. As an artist, you can't afford to just neglect of where people's energy is at the moment, or where they're putting their kind of money. So ordinals is potentially something that is fixing some of the problems. And I'm a Bitcoin centrist. I came to crypto art to make art for and about the decentralized movement before NFTs were a thing. I came for the substance. So I started verifying a lot of my artworks on VerisArt, which is on the BTC platform to begin with. And it's attractive to me to put it on Bitcoin because it's the most stable coin, and a part of the whole idea of NFTs is its standing legacy. I didn't like the very first run of ordinals, which I suppose we're still in, but I just saw a bunch of utter garbage being just dumped on the most important chain, and there was even rumors that it might clog it and whatever. I'm like, oh my god, more monkey banana pictures that might actually ruin something really important, that this is awful. But again if you do your whole thing with intent and built it like we have, ideologically it's very attractive to put something on the Bitcoin chain, and practically so as well. And it just so happens that a lot of the energy and people's attention is there, and where people are spending money. So inscriptions is something that I'd be looking into, at least. And there's all, Solana is a pretty hot chain. It's doing a lot of different things. I might try to find a platform through to mint been through on Solana as well. I am a little bit out of the loop, to be honest, of where NFTs are currently being housed or what is the chain where it should be at and whatever, because I've been so focused in actually building this project now. And now we're getting to the last leg. I still have 5 models to go, but we're coming to the last leg of actually shooting all the substance to it. And then we need to go to post-production. And whilst we're already putting together the team and the marketing strategies and everything, we're only now beginning to come to that point of where we are looking at the strategy of how we're going to be selling these things. So I'm not necessarily the best person to listen to, but I can safely say that inscriptions is something that is probably good to look into.
Got it. Yeah. And I guess, yeah, you briefly mentioned that you have a team and you're going to have the marketing kind of, you know, figured it out. But I think the biggest challenge that many artists are having at the moment, not at the moment, in general, is basically balancing out that whole thing, which you also mentioned, kind of, you know, creation and then sort of everything else that needs to be done until that creation gets its collectors, right? The operational side, the production side, the kind of, you know, the promotion and sales side as well. Many collectors absolutely prefer when that is done by the artist himself, because they want to see who that person is. They want to sort of, you know, create some kind of relationship with that person. So who has created that stuff? For many of them is part of the art itself, and part of and sometimes kind of, you know, has plays a role in their decision making process, right? Some collectors don't really care. They just kind of, you know, can detach the two and look at the art whether they like it or not. But as an artist yourself, like, how are you trying to balance these two sides of the things, the creation and then everything else that needs to be done?
No, increasingly with delegation, because I finally have the people around me that I can trust and really like as well. You know, that's an important part of this, is that you have the people around you who have the competence, but easily those kinds of personalities as well, who are supportive enough and challenging enough in order to keep the whole thing alive in that kind of a way. And, you know, we have so many different ways of branching outside of the bubble of art, because we can work with celebrities, we can work with companies, we can work with, you know, all different kinds of projects and industries. The way that we implement this, that the playing field is so big that we're not going to run out of the playground, so to speak. It's we're still educating people on how to see art as more of something that they can truly participate in a way that makes sense for them, as opposed to it being its own insular kind of red wine drinking. Ooh, aha! Is this round shape the, you know, whatever? So it's we're trying to burst the damn doors in order to get art to be a little bit more participatory in other sectors of life as well as its own. And I think that's where the mentality and the opportunity really lies. Like, for example, I'd love to collaborate with your new project, because of what you're putting together is something that is quite interesting. So maybe we can suggest it.
Oh yeah, definitely. We need to talk about it, because again, as I said, like it wasn't even meant to become a collection. So I was just playing around in the evenings just to soothe my nerves. So it wasn't really anything that I thought would become a, you know, quote unquote project. But then I started seeing a trend and I started kind of, you know, adding up stories to it and things like that. So so it's shaping up, and I have like I have quite a bit of that going on. So would definitely want to pick your brain and talk about it for sure, because I'm in that process where I'm trying to figure out, okay, you know, now that we have this, what do we do with it kind of thing. So definitely I would love to talk to you about that. And I guess if we want to sort of slowly start wrapping this up, I mean, we started from the fact that, you know, when we spoke in the very beginning, it was just the starting point. Everyone was super exciting. Those were the times when everyone kind of, you know, was seeing positive progress with every upcoming month. We had those Clubhouse rooms, we had those Twitter spaces with us, we had those amazing communities of artists and kind of, you know, a lot of supporting each other, kind of educating each other, sharing our own knowledge, our own experiences, finding new people, kind of, you know, that we ended up liking and keeping in touch with, etc. And then we had kind of, you know, the winter coming in. Now things are warming up again. Do you think it's going to be yet another cycle which is going to repeat the previous ones and we're going to do the same mistakes and end up in the same spot? Is it going to be kind of, you know, just a new wave of the same thing with a different flavor? Or do you think this time we're going to see something different? Like what, how do you imagine this new wave coming, this new bull run for the art side of things? What is going to happen?
I think the art is very much going to follow the crypto market, and it's going to be similar in its cycle in this kind of way, that hopefully the NFT side is a little bit more mature, a little bit better than it was the last time. We've undoubtedly going to see a lot of garbage and kind of all the things that come with a bull run. Yeah, it's going to be the thing. I would say probably couple more cycles, the digital art side is going to follow the crypto market more than anything else, because that's where the buyers are. It's going to take a long time before it matures out of the crypto market into its own thing, into the art world at large. Last year in Art Dubai, we already saw a lot of reputable good galleries who entered the digital art side. But it's going to take time to mature, and that's okay. That's a good thing. It should be quite slow in how it's adopted. But we're going to probably be surprised by quite a few things too. I mean, we didn't see how around the corner the AI explosion was going to be, and the exponential curve on which the AI development is on is staggering. So it's going to be interesting to see where we're going to be with AI within a year or two, because already in 1 year, what's so hard for like an organic brain like ours to wrap our minds around is what exponential growth really is, as far as I understand, is that it took a year from the Will Smith eating spaghetti being absolutely ridiculous to being something that is much, much closer to now Will Smith being eating spaghetti. But then the time compressed of how long before it's actually something double or triple amazing is going to be half a year or even less. Or I don't know how much the time compression is going to be on all of these algorithms and what they're going to be doing. So that's going to surprise us. But we live in such a volatile world right now. We had COVID. We're probably going to have something new, some new disasters. Some people are going to know that they say that we're already in the third world war, and we're just in kind of waiting for other pockets to inflame rather than this being something that is quite contained. I'm worrisome altogether with how many narratives are being pushed that have nothing to do with reality and have something to do with other people's power agendas and kind of controls, rather than trying to deal with the harshness of life altogether, what this planet is giving us as challenges. That's really worrisome of how off the ground our feet are in relation to this giant rock and water ball hurling around in space. You know, we really have a lot of madness. I mean, I think it was already UN is kind of stating that mental illness is the biggest problem that we're going to be facing now already, very soon, if not already there. So those things are really quite something when you take into consideration markets or geopolitical situations or whatever. And that's going to keep it interesting. Also very much just in all of its simplicity, the ETH of Bitcoin now, what that's going to do when all of these funds can come in. I mean, we're not even in the halvening yet, and we've already passed the previous peak. So it could get pretty crazy out there in terms of.
It is going to be. Yeah, I think it's time to start buckling up, because it's going to be very hard to predict how it's going to go and how fast it's going to happen and kind of, you know, what we will be going through. So I feel like it's exciting times ahead. But at the same time, for me personally, it's so hard to. Like, how do you even prepare for that if you don't know what's coming, right? It's very hard to predict what's coming, but then, you know that something is coming and it's going to be fast and you better prepare, but you don't even know how to prepare because you have no idea to prepare for what. So it's kind of a bit of anticipation and kind of, you know, this whole FOMO about, okay, what am I going to do right this time? You know, how am I going to make sure I'm not missing out on any of that again? Right. But yeah, we'll see what happens. But I think no matter what happens, I think what's important, and I've seen this happen to many people, is like, you know, to try not to lose yourself, right? Kind of, you know, to not forget your own values, to not forget the whole purpose and the origin idea of why you came into this space, what attracted you here to be here, kind of, you know, the people that you liked, to the concepts that you were about. Because when that craziness comes in, it's so hard, it's so easy to get distracted, to lose yourself and kind of, you know, to get into that whole noise and action and everything else. But I guess kind of, you know, making sure that you don't lose yourself and you stick to your principles is very important, because as we said, it cycles. It's going to calm down afterwards, after a while. And when it does, you want to make sure that you can look in people's eyes and still be yourself and not be ashamed about the stuff you did during the bull market, right? So yes, that's very important.
Very much so. Definitely agree with that a lot.
Yeah. Any closing thoughts? Anything else? Do you like? Should we tell people where to go to learn more about your projects, about you as an artist? Where should I send them? I'll include the links in the show notes, but I mean for the audio.
Yeah, very cool. I mean, it's been super fun talking with you again, and keep resonating with the ideas. I suppose the just maybe as a kind of closing thought to the previous is something that we, going back to COVID a little bit, and the kind of cultural thing is that we, even in the West, we tend to be, despite me being in Finland in Scandinavia, or you go to America, or you know, south of Europe or wherever, the Western world to a large part, I think, forked. We already feel like here alone we're living on different planets, because let's say that there are those who still absolutely believe in the government corporate media, that they're still just the bastions of truth, and their mission is to inform us. And then there's the others who are looking at that whole thing going like, I can't believe that you guys are still like buying into that stuff. So those are already like vastly different cultures inhabiting the same families. And that's a rift that we don't even know how to begin to kind of mend at this point. And that comes to the whatever Thanksgiving dinner or Christmas dinner, where we realize that there's no going back to where we were very easily. And that's part of the prediction is how this is all going to play out, is that we're somehow, hopefully, again, my naive hope that one way or another, we can come a little bit back closer to that. Or then it does really just mean that people are really now going their own way, and we're literally living on different planets in terms of our awareness of how we perceive this world to be. So that's something just to consider, I suppose, as a part of this whole thing. Now, how to find me? Artforcrypto.com is a website that I proudly started in 2017, from where you can find a lot of this stuff. And how I started this whole contemporary art career, and where the Census series is now best represented, is on artevo.org. So that's artevo.org. And on X and Instagram, it's at Art by Vesa, VESA. And I'm really grateful to have this moment with you and really actually talk about things that matter. And thank you for letting me talk about the census series, because it is really important to me. It's been a monumental effort already, and it's still going to be a monumental effort to put it all together. And despite of its initially, I suppose, controversial sounding things of shooting nudes and muses and this kind of thing, hopefully it's really doing something that is going to be quite fresh. And when people see those stories, they're going to be as touched by them as we were doing this whole thing, because it's built for, at least in my perspective, to remind myself as an artist of why it is that I do this to begin with. Because to a degree, the last 2 years when I was doing marketing and stage peaking and all of this kind of stuff, there were moments where I forgot, you know? So
I can imagine. Well, to be fair, I feel like, you know, we're living at times when shooting nudes is not as controversial, and I think what you're doing with that collection is probably way more controversial, because anything that is raw, authentic, and human these days kind of, you know, is considered controversial and risky, and maybe much riskier than shooting nudes, I guess. So that's at least how I perceive it.
I would say actually that you're absolutely right that shooting nudes with our OnlyFans culture and everything is totally normalized, and sex work is normalized and all of this kind of stuff. But actually, and this might be the most controversial thing that I say on this podcast, and I'm a little bit hesitant to say it, but it is kind of true that even if it is still old white men who mostly in the art world do a lot of the buying, I would say that the art world in general has been a matriarchy for quite some time already. Most of the curators, the gallery runners, the museum runners, and those who are, let's say, how it's said that often the man is the head of the family, but the woman is the neck. And in this kind of way, it's been that at least half the head is taken over to be a woman, but definitely the neck. So wherever the neck is pointing the head of who the emerging artists are and what is acceptable to do and what is considered cool is done by women. And because in the art world, the concept of the nude woman or the muse or this kind of thing, that women have been reduced to sort of objectified things of lust or whatever, there's actually massive resistance to what it is that I've been doing the last 15 years from that perspective, because I'm, you know, in the form that I'm in. And then also the subject matter is something that is like, if you have a nude woman in an artwork, it's perceived as something like, oh my God, that is so lame, because that's the history of the patriarchy or whatever it is. So in that sense, you know, I hope it's not going to be too much getting resistance because of that tradition, that people are actually going to look into what this is, so that it doesn't just get the initial, these are not the droids you're looking for type situation.
Yeah. Well, I'm very curious to see how it rolls out. It would be interesting to see how people perceive it and how people react to it and how it goes. So good luck with it. I know that it's... you know, it's always tough and kind of difficult emotionally to put out something that took so much of the time and effort and is so meaningful to the artist. So I really hope that it pays off. And yeah, good luck with the project. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Annie. It was a real joy.
That's all that I've got for you today. If you want more of my content, please check out my newsletter at annealexander.com/subscribe, and I'll see you in the next episode.